Let's say hello to Gavin Gray now, joining us on the line from London. Good morning to you, Gavin. We'll start with matters relating to Brexit, shall we, where the Prime Minister of Ireland has said that he believes a Brexit deal is still possible.
Yes, good morning, Africa. And a slight softening in tone, I think, now from the Irish. Of course, the British Prime Minister put forward his proposals a little earlier in the week and said these are a fair compromise. They are flexible. They show the UK is being flexible. Now it's time for the EU to do the same ahead of a crucial summit that they have in just over 10 days' time. Initially slightly rebuffed by many in the EU, including the Irish Taoiseach or Prime Minister Leo Varadkar, but he has now said that a Brexit deal is still possible, but the current proposals do not form the basis for deeper negotiations. That may give a glimmer of hope. Why is he so important? Well, because, of course, the future land border between Ireland, part of the EU, and Northern Ireland, part of the UK, is absolutely crucial to this any deal going ahead. It was, of course, the border in the past, before the Good Friday Agreement, that led to so much violence and terrorism in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And the fear is that it could remain if another border is erected between those two countries. And so consequently, the European Union saying we aren't going to go back to that, we would do anything to avoid that, the UK saying the same. But of course, if it's a land border between two countries, there will need to be some arrangements. And Leo Varadkar now saying that he thinks, I think a deal is still possible. He says, and I quote, it is possible at the European Council summit in 2 weeks' time that the current position as of today is the European Union, including Ireland, doesn't feel that the proposals put forward by the UK yet form the basis for deeper negotiations. Well, the clock is ticking. The Prime Minister says it's UK Prime Minister says it's that deal or no deal. And no doubt there's a lot of pressure on all sides here because every single European Union country has to agree to any kind of extension. And it would appear not all of them are that happy.
Indeed. In France, the police there say that terrorism was probably to blame for the stabbing to death of four people at the Paris police headquarters by a colleague.
This is a complete turnaround from their initial assessments of what happened. So on Thursday, a police worker who worked in the IT department, he was in the administrative side of the Paris police headquarters, launched an attack on colleagues, killing four. Three of them were police officers and one was another administrative worker. Now, at the time, it was being put about by politicians and the police and the investigators themselves that they thought he had just suddenly flipped and attacked over a workplace dispute. However, it's now been revealed that the man, Mikhail Harpon, had contact with members of the Salafist Islam movement. It is a radical version of Islam. He had exchanged text messages of a religious nature with his wife before the attack and had earlier defended the 2015 attack on the magazine Charlie Hebdo in Paris and other atrocities of a terrorist nature. Now, of course, that means all of a sudden that instead of a criminal matter, anti-terror investigators took over the inquiry, and suddenly this whole slant has got a very, very different thing on it. So it's believed he converted to Islam and had been in contact with the Salafist movement over the previous year or so with his conversion. Basically now the authorities are working on the fact that he might have been radicalized. Either way, it's a very different set of circumstances to what we were initially led to believe. When he attacked his workers, his colleagues, with a kitchen knife, he later was shot dead in the same building. His wife has reportedly told police that he'd become incoherent and had heard voices the night before the attack. Certainly the investigations really close to major tourist sites like the Notre Dame Cathedral and so forth, right in the heart of Paris, these investigations taking on a very different complexion.
Indeed. A British mother of a teenager killed in a car crash involving the wife of a US diplomat has urged her, as a mom, to return to the UK for questioning.
Yes, diplomatic immunity is rarely waived, but I don't think really that the victim's family are calling for this. They just want somebody who was involved in the accident, where there were only the son on a motorbike and the woman driving a car involved in this, and the son of this British woman died in the motorbike collision. And they said, you know, when she was taken in for questioning, the diplomat's wife promised not to leave the UK, had said she had no plans to leave the UK. Now, granted diplomatic immunity, she has flown from where the accident happened, where they lived in Northampton in the Midlands, back to America. Well, the foreign secretary here, Dominic Raab, says that the he's been urging the U.S. embassy to reconsider after the State Department said the diplomatic immunity was rarely waived. The foreign minister here, has said that he's expressed the UK's disappointment with that decision, but also the decision for her to leave the UK. So what happened was this 19-year-old motorbike rider was riding his bike outside a base used by the American Air Force in the UK when it would appear a woman who is the wife of a diplomat pulled out. And witnesses report she drove on the wrong side of the road. Wrong side of the road, of course, for us here in the UK, it would be the right side of the road in America. It was said that she collided then with a motorbike, killing this 19-year-old. Now, the investigations for that crash are still continuing. But under the 1961 Vienna Convention, diplomats and their family members are immune from prosecution in their host country, so long as they're not nationals of that country, and their immunity can be waived by the state that has sent them. So that's what this particular British family are hoping will happen. But that now follows investigations. There are more than 22,500 people in the UK who hold diplomatic immunity.
That is a high number. I didn't expect it to be as high as that. We've been speaking for the last while now about some of the challenges that are being faced by stores, particularly along the high streets. And another high-end UK department store chain, John Lewis, this time seeking discounts from its landlords to cut costs.
Yes, I can't tell you what a shock this is in one sense, because John Lewis is held very much as, you know, the pinnacle of department stores, a chain of department stores, very upmarket, very well heeled as such with its customers, and had until recently been making good profits. But like all retailers, it appears to now really be in some trouble. It's made some redundancies, and now it's also been revealed that it is looking to try to get its landlords to cut their rents. So according to reports, the retail giant has been telling landlords in some locations that it is going to withhold 20% of the service charge in this most recent quarter to help it meet its bills. Now, what are the service charge? Well, it's effectively things like for security, for heating. It's those sorts of things. But many are saying these service charges have rocketed in bills over the recent months and years. And John Lewis is saying, look, we're doing everything we can to reduce our cost base, but unfortunately being faced with regular increases to the service charges that we pay in some of the shops in shopping centres. John Lewis has around 20 stores in covered shopping centres, and it wants these landlords to shoulder some of the service charge during the so-called golden quarter. That, of course, is the last 3 months of the year leading up to Christmas. And John Lewis posting its first ever loss for the first half of this year. Of course, this follows Debenhams, another big department store chain here, not as upmarket, which managed to slash its rent bill with reductions of up to 50% after securing a restructuring deal with creditors and the closure of so many other companies like House of Fraser and BHS too.
Keeping it matters shopping, one of the world's oldest department stores is said to be bought out of administration by a local businessman.
Yes, Bennett's. You may not have heard the name, but it's been in business since 1734 and was billed as the world's oldest department store. Nobody's challenged that I know, so we do think it was the oldest department store. Unfortunately, however, the store went into administration, suffering exactly the same retail problems as we've been discussing. High rents, high business rates, and huge competition online, of course. Now, there was a very sad moment going into administration, as you can imagine. It's in Derby, in the Midlands of the UK. But it looks like administrators now have agreed a sale with a local businessman who already owns one of the city's oldest pubs. However, and this is the big however, Paul Hurst, that businessman, says it may not be possible to keep the store in its current location in Iron Gate, which is right in the heart of Derby. The deal comes just a short while after a previously agreed sale to another company called London Soul Limited fell through, which is due to be completed shortly. So if retail does return to Bennett's, that is great news, of course, but the new boss says that there could be at least £300,000 worth, 6 million South African rand worth of work that needs to be done immediately, but that's why staying in that same place may not be necessarily what happens to Bennett's. But again, another indicator of the tough retail climate at the moment, Africa.
It really, really is tough. Gavin, thank you very much for your time this morning. Gavin Gray is back with us next weekend.